Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Thank you for your patience. As you all are learning new technologies with our court, we are also learning new technologies. So it can be a painful process, but we're getting there slowly but surely. We have the two cases set on our 130 docket. If the clerk will announce counsel, he'll be arguing. Thank you. If you'll give us just a moment, make sure we're all geared up here. In case we have to check anything in the record. All right, and there was one handout provided by the real parties in interest and the appellees, and I assume, Mr. Tanner, you have received a copy of that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Tanner, if you're ready to proceed.
Thank you. Before proceeding, I would like to take an opportunity to introduce my client representatives. George Wozinski in the legal department for the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, and Joey Hippolito. Also present are my associates, Josh Kersey and Matt Pierce. Counsel, may it please the court. There are two cases we are addressing today. One case arises out of the appellant's motion to dismiss the subject civil action under the anti-SLAPP statute. I'm not going to really address that particular proceeding today. We're going to rely on our briefs. Of course, if your honors have any questions, we'll be happy to address those. I'm going to focus on the mandamus action, which arises from the trial court's decision to overrule the plea to jurisdiction filed by relators in the trial court, and relates to principally to the preemption arguments that have been addressed in the party's briefs. In terms of the factual background, this case arises from the relators' efforts and activities to engage in associational and free speech activities at various Walmart stores in Dallas, Ellis, and Tarrant counties. All of the activities were peaceful, orderly events. There were no arrests made with respect to any of the activities in question in Texas in this litigation. Walmart obtained a temporary restraining order in the trial court, and then this court has entered a temporary order enjoining and restraining such activities pending the duration of the appellate proceedings. This court should grant the mandamus petition and direct the trial court to vacate its order overruling the plea to jurisdiction and enter an order of dismissal. Simply put, the National Labor Relations Act, as we have briefed thoroughly, completely preempts this civil action. By way of legal background, when Congress enacted the National Labor Relations Act, it enacted a comprehensive federal labor law that governs labor disputes and labor relations in the private sector, or throughout most of the private sector. Congress established a federal agency, the National Labor Relations Board, to administer and enforce the National Labor Relations Act. Region 16 of the NLRB is located here in Fort Worth. The Supreme Court has consistently held that when Congress passed the NLRA, Congress intended this law to occupy the entire area of labor relations and labor disputes in the private sector, to the exclusion of every other federal and state agency and organization. So accordingly, the United States Supreme Court has consistently held, based on the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, that the authority of the NLRB over labor disputes and labor relations preempts that of any other civil actions regarding conduct that comes within the purview of the NLRA. As Walmart has conceded in this case, the doctrine the Supreme Court has established, known as the Garmin Doctrine, is that the NLRA preempts lawsuits that involve conduct that the NLRA prohibits or protects, or even arguably prohibits or protects. The policy underlying this doctrine is quite clear. It is the avoidance of interference with the nationwide authority of the National Labor Relations Board over labor disputes and labor relations in the private sector. So preemption applies to laws that seek to directly regulate labor disputes or labor relations or peaceful labor activities, but also to laws such as trespass that indirectly impact or affect labor disputes or labor relations. With respect to the arguably prohibited analysis, both the union parties and Walmart, the real parties in interest, rely on the Sears Roebuck case. Sears held that for a lawsuit to be preempted under the arguably prohibited rule, there must be at least one matter common to both the alleged arguable NLRA violation and lawsuit that is substantially identical. In this case, there are three elements regarding Walmart's NLRB charge and the trespass suit that are substantially identical. First, when Walmart filed its charge with the Labor Board over the same events at issue in this lawsuit, the company argued that, quote, the UFCW and our Walmart violated the NLRA by conducting a series of trespassery, end quote, demonstrations. With the unfair labor practice charge, Walmart submitted a document titled a summary of events. In that summary of events, which is in the record, Walmart repeatedly argued that the union parties violated the federal act when they, quote, invaded, unquote, or, quote, entered, unquote, Walmart stores or adjacent parking lots without authorization and, quote, refused to leave when asked or ordered, end quote. This, of course, is the very definition of trespass. Therefore, Walmart's labor board charge and lawsuit share a common element, a common legal theory, trespass.
Counsel, aren't they seeking different types of relief from the relief sought in front of the NLRB?
One of the principal remedies that the real parties in interest are seeking is injunctive relief, and I will address that subject. But certainly the National Labor Relations Board has the authority and the power to seek injunctive relief to prohibit trespassing. In fact, when the unfair labor practice charge was filed by Walmart or the Walmart parties, they cited two cases for that very proposition, two National Labor Relations Board decisions, including the District 65 case, which I think indicates quite clearly that the National Labor Relations Board has the power and the authority to seek injunctive relief to prohibit trespassing under appropriate circumstances when the board determines that such conduct violates the act. The board has done that many times over the years. We cited a number of cases in our brief, and I can touch on some of those cases in the course of this argument.
Isn't the real distinction that issues before the National Labor Relations Board are more substantive as to actually the speech and the actions and the conduct. And here in state court, we're really just talking about location, the location of the picketing that's allowed.
Respectfully, Justice Walker, that's not the case here. In the pleadings, consistently, Walmart has attacked the relators, the union parties, with respect to the content of their demonstrations, although all peaceful, and the manner in which they conducted the demonstrations. It even ranges from allegations that they shouldn't have worn our Walmart t-shirts into some of these stores.
But is it not true that the temporary injunction that they sought and they obtained and the permanent injunction that they're seeking relate only to the location of the picketing?
To a degree, it relates to the location, but under the Sears case, the issue that the Supreme Court addressed and resolved was whether or not the trespass litigation or the civil action in question and the theory pleaded by the same party before the National Labor Relations Board share a common element. And here there are three. In addition to the legal theory that's common, trespass, the second element is this: they rely on the same facts to support the Labor Board charge and trespass claim.
Yeah, but even if all that's true, the deeply rooted exception to the doctrine of preemption in this circumstance, doesn't that allow for a state court to retain jurisdiction over location of picketing?
No, not under these circumstances. That is within the jurisdiction of the National Labor Relations Board, which the Walmart parties here invoked when they filed the unfair labor practice charge in question. And that goes to the Sears case. And again, they rely on the same facts to support their theory in both forms. Indeed, in our mandamus petition, we include a lengthy summary comparison of the facts that Walmart alleged that violated the NLRA and that constitute allegedly trespass. That's found on pages 30 to 41 of the mandamus petition. The facts they rely on are the same. And thirdly, the evidence they rely on is the same. Indeed, most of the declarations and affidavits that Walmart has filed in this case in the trial court, and they're included in the appellate record to support its claim for injunctive relief, expressly state that the evidence relied on in those affidavits and declarations is relied on to support both the National Labor Relations Act claim and state court or court proceedings. So there are these three common elements. And simply put, when you really distill it to its essence, Justice Walker, they presented the same case to the National Labor Relations Board and only a short few weeks later filed this lawsuit seeking essentially the same type of relief, injunctive relief. And the NLRB has the power and the authority, just as they did in the District 65 case, to seek an injunction to prohibit trespassing with respect to location. And again, the Sears case really, if you deconstruct the Sears case, that really tells the tale here. In Sears, the Supreme Court held that the company's lawsuit was not preempted under the arguably prohibited preemption doctrine there because there were no identical matters common to the lawsuit there and possible NLRA violation. The company just pled a very simple trespass lawsuit in Sears. So the only matter at issue there was the location of the activity, not the manner in which the activity was conducted or the content. And again, here, the Walmart parties have objected to the content. They've objected to our Walmart t-shirts. They've objected to hand billing or the manner.
They've objected to that in the 352nd District Court in Tarrant County.
Correct. They did. They have objected to hand billing. They've objected to peaceful discussions between our Walmart representatives and employees of or known as associates of Walmart stores addressing these matters. Again, speech and associational activities. They've objected to all those things. They've objected to our Walmart playing music in the parking lot. Not just the location, but the conduct itself and the manner in which they've conducted these very peaceful demonstrations. So in Sears, the location of the activity was really irrelevant to the potential NLRA violation. Only the purpose of the activity was relevant to the potential federal statutory violation, not where the activity occurred. The Sears Court held that there were no matters common to both the trespass lawsuit and the potential NLRA violation. And again, the only matter at issue with respect to the potential NLRA violation in that case was the purpose or objective of the activity, which was irrelevant to the way the company pled its trespass lawsuit. And there was no unfair labor practice charge filed in Sears. Because these matters were not the same, the Sears court held that the NLRA did not preempt the lawsuit under the arguably protected doctrine. This case is very, very different from Sears, as I've already touched upon. First, because of the way that Walmart asserted its NLRA violation and pled its trespass claim, there is a common legal theory, trespass. Second, unlike the company in Sears that did not object to the activities in its lawsuit or the manner in which they were conducted, Walmart in this case has objected to the nature of the events held by the union parties and the manner in which they conducted those events. And another example, in the second amended petition, Walmart objected in part to not the location of the activities, but they objected to a group of Our Walmart demonstrators who chanted Our Walmart slogans. Speech. They objected to the handbilling. So unlike Sears, where there was basically a simple trespass claim with no claim of violence or anything else that would be problematic, Walmart pled and argued its lawsuit and labor board charge so that there were, in this case, so that there are three matters common to both claims. Further, when Walmart filed the unfair labor practice charge here, asserting that the events in question or the activities conducted by Our Walmart and its allies violated the National Labor Relations Act, the company, under the case law, the company effectively conceded that its lawsuit involved conduct that the NLRA arguably prohibits. And this, of course, makes perfect sense. Walmart would not have filed an unfair labor practice charge with the NLRB and argued the charge the way it did, that there was trespassory conduct, unless it believed there was a plausible legal theory to support its claim. And again, they relied on NLRB precedent reflecting that the board has the power to enjoin trespassory conduct. Walmart, as I mentioned, cited two cases to support the charge that was precedent under the National Labor Relations Act. This is why the NLRB did not just summarily dismiss the charge. They thoroughly investigated it and took it quite seriously.
Are all the parties the same in the NLRB case as in the state court proceeding?
The parties are essentially the same, according to Walmart, because their conduct, their correspondence by which they supposedly revoked the invitation to enter the premises, they have claimed that that correspondence to the UFCW International Union applies to all of the defendants' appellants in this case. Otherwise, in the state court action, without objection by the union parties, Walmart joined as parties plaintiff affiliated entities that had held leasehold rights or ownership rights over the various properties in question.
And does 1 through 10, are they only in this litigation in the state courts?
We don't know who they are. I think they're really fictional as far as we can tell.
I think they were described as hypothetical individuals.
Hypothetical, yes.
So we don't know if they're Walmart employees or otherwise.
We do not know who these hypothetical people are. But now, with respect, this case turned in the trial court on the deeply rooted local concern exception. And with respect to that exception, Walmart's briefs attempt to create the impression that Sears held that trespass fits that exception. So there is no such holding in the Sears case. Sears does not hold that. Sears does not suggest that. Even a cursory reading of the opinion one time will put that assertion to rest. Rather, the court held that the trespass lawsuit was not preempted because the controversy in the lawsuit was different than the controversy that would have been involved with any NLRA violation. And again, there was no charge filed, there was no NLRB proceeding. And it's worth mentioning at this point that there are some courts, for example, the 11th Circuit, that have held that once a party files an unfair labor practice charge with the board under these circumstances, that preemption is automatic. That's really the end of the question, and that no civil court action can be brought. So the Sears court determined that the trespass lawsuit was not preempted because the matters in the lawsuit and the potential NLRA violation simply were not identical, and not because the deeply rooted local exception applies to trespass. There, as the court noted, the company would have been in the anomalous position of having no forum to litigate or present its dispute if the court had determined that that particular litigation was preempted. And significantly, the Sears court defined the deeply rooted exception in a way to exclude trespass unaccompanied by any violent conduct. The court defined the exception as, quote, laws prohibiting violence, defamation, the intentional infliction of emotional distress, or obstruction to property. There is no evidence, none in this record, of any violent conduct, any threats of violence, any damage to property, or any related violent behavior. Sears explained that violence, threats of violence, and threatening conduct that involves property damage fit the deeply rooted exception because, quote, none of those violations of state law involves protected conduct under the NLRA. Unprotected conduct also includes mass picketing, force, threats of force, and violence under the Russell and Laburnum cases. In contrast, there's an absolute statement, unequivocal statement, recognizing that the NLRA will actually protect some trespasses. The NLRA will not protect violence or threats of violence under any circumstances, but the Sears court recognized that statute protects some trespassery conduct. So trespassery conduct is clearly, when it's in the context of a labor dispute involving these kinds of private parties, clearly within the purview of the federal law. You will not find a broader, more expansive, all-encompassing preemption doctrine in any area of jurisprudence than the Garmin Doctrine, as we've explained, I think, adequately in our briefs. Again, there's no evidence that in this case, including the affidavits presented by Walmart, that there was any violence, threats of violence, or property damage at any of the locations in question in Tarrant County, Ellis County, or Dallas County. None. And this is especially significant when you contrast and compare it with the types of violent behavior, physical force, property damage that was involved in cases that Sears did cite, such as Russell and Laburnum. There's no question that the state courts of Texas have the power and always have the power to enjoin and restrain acts of violence, threatened acts of violence, property damage, mass obstructions of rights of way or ingress or egress. That's not what's at issue here. These were all peaceful demonstrations.
The real parties, however, cite some instances of surrounding managers by 50 or 60 people and refusing to leave, and interference with customers' ability to enter or leave the facilities?
There was no evidence presented that I'm aware of in connection with their amended petition in this case that related to such conduct in Texas. In the Sears Roebuck case, you know, as I mentioned, the court delineated the types of conduct that would fall within the local, deeply rooted local concern exception. Trespass is not mentioned by the Sears court. The Sears court said, the court has held that state jurisdiction to enforce its laws prohibiting violence, defamation, IIED, or obstruction of access to property is not preempted. But none of those violations of state law involves protected conduct.
Well, if it doesn't mention trespass, then how does the Sears case apply here?
The Sears case was about a trespass claim, but again, this is where the court held the reason it was not preempted was because the potential NLRA allegations or potential NLRA violations did not share commonalities with the trespass litigation. It was simply a simple trespass case where only the location was in dispute. The company in Sears did not raise any objection to the conduct with respect to the nature of the conduct or the activities that were being conducted. Only the location there was involved.
Well, isn't that true here too? I mean, haven't they limited by their pleadings, and I'll stick with their pleadings, their complaint and their request for injunctive relief to staying off the property of Walmart?
Justice Garner, applying Supreme Court precedent, this case is preempted because there are three common elements between the unfair labor practice charge and the civil action brought in the 352nd District Court of Tarrant County, Texas. And again, at any time, the Walmart parties could have sought and did seek originally injunctive relief from the National Labor Relations Board with respect to the numerous activities, Black Friday activities that were conducted this past November. If they objected to any of our Walmart representatives or any allies entering the premises with respect to these demonstrations that were conducted throughout the country, they could have gone and still could go to the National Labor Relations Board today and file a charge and request injunctive relief under Section 10 of the National Labor Relations Act. We've cited a number of cases in our briefs post-Sears holding that the NLRA preempted trespass lawsuits. I'd also like to address expeditiously some cases that have been cited by the Walmart parties, the real parties in interest. Walmart cites the Taggart case for the proposition that property rights fits the deeply rooted local exception. Taggart does not stand for that proposition. The Supreme Court in Taggart dismissed the writ of certiorari as being improvidently granted on procedural grounds and reached no substantive issues. There was one justice in that case that wrote that the case was that NLRA preemption did not obtain. But two justices on the panel, Justice Harlan and Justice Black, in their concurrence and dissent, stated that if the court had reached the merits, they would have found that the NLRA clearly preempted the company's trespass lawsuit. But at the end of the day, the merits were not reached and the writ was dismissed on procedural grounds. To our knowledge, there are no other decisions holding that lawsuits over property rights standing alone fits the deeply rooted local concern exception. By filing the charge in this case, Walmart certainly conceded implicitly, as the case law has noted, that the NLRA arguably prohibited the activities in question here. And because of these common elements, the case is preempted by the National Labor Relations Act. And just the trial court, for whom I have great respect, indicated that she did struggle with this, and I think her comments at the end of the hearing reflected a misapprehension. The deeply rooted local exception, as the Garmin court clearly enunciated, was not developed to permit various state courts in different regions of the country to express their preferences, to create an exception by an express preference or by reason of variations in regional or local laws. Rather, the Supreme Court said quite clearly in Sears that the purpose of the recognizing the exception is so that with matters that are directly related to the well-being, the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of any particular state, that is, protecting the state's police power to enforce its laws to prohibit and to prosecute acts of violence, threats of violence, or damage to property. And under the facts of this case, it does not seem to us to be a close question, but, and it's clearly preempted by the NLRA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tanner. Mr. Wheelis?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. Pleasure to be here this afternoon. With the court's permission, Mr. Casey and I are going to split our time. Depending on how greedy I get, I may take a little more of his time, depending on where we're going and the court's questions. He'll handle the Citizens Participation Act question to the extent we need to address that. Let me jump right in on a couple of important points. I believe I heard my union colleague say that the Sears decision does not give state courts the authority to enter an injunction against the location of picketing, trespassery picketing. I believe that I heard that right. And I just want to go right to Sears and look at the Sears decision. Of course, Sears is the seminal trespass case. It's the seminal case that sets out the standards on how to evaluate state trespass actions against labor organizations. So when I heard that Sears wasn't about trespass, I kind of jumped a little bit because I thought it was all about trespass and only about trespass. But the key site in Sears is 436 U.S. at 197. Quote, in the present case, the controversy which Sears might have presented to the labor board is not the same as the controversy presented to the state court. If Sears had filed a charge, the federal issue would have been whether the picketing had a recognitional or work assignment objective. Decision of that issue would have entailed relatively complex factual and legal determinations, completely unrelated to the simple question whether a trespass had occurred. And this is the important part. Don't tell them I said that the first part wasn't important. This is the most relevant part to this issue about state jurisdiction. Conversely, in the state action, Sears only challenged the location of the picketing. Sears only challenged the location of the picketing. Whether the picketing had an objective prescribed by federal law was irrelevant to the state claim. Accordingly, permitting the state court to adjudicate Sears' trespass claim would create no realistic risk of interference. Let me say that again. No realistic risk of interference with the labor board's primary jurisdiction to enforce the statutory prohibition against unfair labor practices. So there's several really important thoughts there that I want to emphasize. The first one is that absolutely state courts retain jurisdiction to deal with the location of trespassery conduct. The second important point is the court assumed that the union's trespassery conduct constituted an unfair labor practice charge. If you're a labor law geek, you know, the charge there was an 8B4 charge, which is unlawful secondary pressure against a disinterested employer. The carpenters were there at Sears picketing on Sears' private property, trying to force Sears to stop doing business with a drywall contractor. That's unlawful secondary objective for the picketing. And because of the unlawful objective under the National Labor Relations Act, the court had to wrestle. Hey, wait a second. There might be some interference here because we assume the union's trespass constitutes an unfair labor practice. We assume that. But there's no risk of interference because there are two separate controversies at issue. On the one hand, we're dealing with the employer's property right. On the other hand, we're dealing with the labor law right that says that you can't pressure a neutral employer. Two separate legal controversies. So I believe that Sears very definitely stands for the proposition that this court retains jurisdiction over the location of the picketing. Now, sort of the flip side of the coin that we hear from the union is that, well, geez, this case not just about location, because Walmart challenges the free speech rights. They're challenging the T-shirts that they wear, the words that they say, the chanting that they engage in. Absolutely false. It's only about location. As we said in our papers, we're perfectly happy to honor the union's right, its First Amendment right, to go out on the public sidewalk right next to the Walmart stores and demonstrate to their heart's content, as long as they don't block ingress and egress or engage in any other kind of criminal behavior. Why does Walmart specify in its complaint what happened? Imagine that if Walmart had said in its complaint, 10 union supporters walked into a Walmart store. For those of you who are as old as I am, maybe a little younger, where's the beef? The judge would say, how does that constitute trespass? So we have to allege what they did to show that it's different than the invitee, which is a shopper. We have to show their conduct was different than what the general public is invited to come into the stores to do. And second, we have to show what they did, the conga line in the produce aisle, the flash mobs next to the cash registers, the screaming, the chanting, the bullhorns. We have to describe all of that in the complaint, not to establish trespass, but to show irreparable harm. That, judge, there really is something here that needs to be enjoined because we can't conduct our business in an orderly manner without it. So, yes, Walmart describes the conduct, but does a quiet flash mob in front of the cash registers not constitute trespass, whereas a really loud one would constitute? That just doesn't make any sense. So Walmart is not alleging that the manner or the nature of the conduct constitutes trespass or not. It's about the location. Bullhorns, great, public sidewalk, not inside the stores. So the union wants to make this as complicated as possible, but it really boils down to a very simple question. Are property rights important? Particularly in Texas, in the state of Texas. The union admits, as it must, that federal labor law does not preempt a state court action that is deeply rooted in local feeling and responsibility. We all agree with that. Even where the facts give rise to a separate and distinct cause of action under federal labor law. So even where the underlying conduct creates a federal labor law claim, the Supreme Court has told us repeatedly that the state action is not preempted if it's a matter deeply rooted in state law. And so the union finds itself in this very peculiar situation of coming to this court and telling this court that property rights and the protection of those rights is not a matter deeply rooted in local feeling and responsibility in the state of Texas. That's just plain wrong. Judge Sudduth knew it was wrong. The Texas Supreme Court has said it's wrong. That court said in the Eggemeyer case, cited in our papers, that property rights are, quote, fundamental, natural, inherent, inalienable. That's important stuff. And the United States Supreme Court has repeatedly rejected the union's argument here. So that if this court agrees that property rights are a matter of deeply rooted local feeling in Texas, that's the end of the preemption inquiry, as we all agree under the Garmin analysis that Garmin carved out these deeply rooted local exceptions.
I have a question for you. Is it your position that the trial court retains jurisdiction under the deeply rooted exception, or is it your position that the trial court retains jurisdiction because trespass isn't preempted, period?
Two sides of the same coin, Your Honor. On the one hand, this Supreme Court of the United States has said three times that I can count that trespass is a matter for the state courts, and I'll talk about those three times in a second. At least under the Sears case, we get and the Belknap Supreme Court cases, we get clear direction that trespass is a matter deeply rooted in local interest, notwithstanding the union's argument. And I'll touch on those just a little bit more. But even if you went to the, and he didn't talk about it, the union didn't talk about the local 926 case, Supreme Court case, dealing with breach of contract. In that case, the court said, look, this is not a deeply rooted case. It said not a deeply rooted case. This is a straight up breach of contract claim where a supervisor claims that the union got him fired. And that's an unfair labor practice charge, not deeply rooted. Therefore, it is is going to be preempted. In that case, the court distinguished the key factor, which is not the factual setting, but is it the legal issues the same? Are the legal controversies the same? That's where the court's worried about interference. Are the legal controversies the same? And the court in the local 926 case, similarly to what the court said in Sears, is that if the legal controversies are not the same or identical, then there's no risk of interference. So here, even if trespass was not a matter deeply rooted and therefore exempt under Garmin, we would still not have preemption because the unfair labor practice charge that we have heard about alleged violation of employee rights. The state trespass claim invokes and asks for relief for employer rights. Two completely separate legal controversies. Now, when the union talked about the unfair labor practice charge, they kind of missed a couple of bits, important bits. And I want to read directly from the unfair labor practice charge that Walmart filed, subsequently withdrew. But we acknowledge that the union's conduct inside these stores could have been an arguable violation of the National Labor Relations Act. But what part? Section 8B1A. Section 8B1A of the National Labor Relations Act says it is an unfair labor practice to intimidate employees in their exercise of their choice to support or reject the union. What did Walmart say as the basis of its charge? Prior to and during the last 6 months, the above-named labor organization, the UFCW, directly and through its subsidiaries, affiliated organizations and agents, including that labor organization known as Our Walmart, violated Section 8B1A of the National Labor Relations Act by planning, orchestrating, and conducting a series of unauthorized, blatantly trespassery in-store mass demonstrations, invasive flash mobs, and other confrontational group activities at numerous facilities nationwide, including but not limited to the facilities listed in the attached spreadsheet, by which the UFCW restrained and coerced employees in the exercise of their Section 7 rights, which includes the right to refrain from supporting the UFCW. So the unfair labor practice charge to which the union repeatedly points invokes one thing. It invokes federal labor law rights for employees, nothing about an employer's property rights. And so I want to finish that thought by talking about two cases that the union pointed to where they assert that the National Labor Relations Board has the right, the ability, the jurisdiction, the expertise to enforce state trespass laws or to prevent trespass. The first one is this 1199 case. Let me just find it here for you. Yes, this was cited in the union's reply brief, page 8, footnote 4, I believe. And there they said, folks, court, no worries. If Walmart's got a problem, just like they argued today, if Walmart's got a problem with our trespass, they can go to the National Labor Relations Board. In the 1199 National Health and Human Services Employees Union case, which is NLRB 339, NLRB 1059, 2003 case, the majority of the National Labor Relations Board found that the union violated Section 8B1A, the same one that I just talked about, by virtue of a union organizer coming into the facility, yelling, screaming, respondents' agents to deliberate, repeated, and unprovoked verbal abuse, including profanity, racial and sexual slurs, and threats of physical harm. Now, the majority said that's intimidating conduct in the workplace. And the dissent, member Wilma Lieben, and for the labor lawyers in the group, she's now retired, but one of the most pro-labor folks you could ever hope to meet. Here's what she said in her dissent about the majority's finding of an 8B1 violation because of this trespassory conduct. She said, quote, emphasizing the hospital setting here, as well as the combination of Joseph's abusive language over 2 weeks and her two physical confrontations with security guards, my colleagues conclude that it was the obvious intent of Joseph's to send a message that respondent would retaliate against anyone, including employees, who stood in its way. While I do not condone Joseph's behavior, it may well have amounted to actionable trespass under state law. And it almost certainly was not protected by the act. I see no basis for finding a violation here. It seems dubious to me that the employees would interpret Joseph's actions as sending them any message at all, even directly. The record simply does not establish the required unmistakable nexus between Joseph's conduct and the Section 7 rights of employees, the only legal interest that Section 8B1A is concerned with. Two key points there. 8B1A is only about the rights of employees. Second, if the employer has a beef with this trespassing union representative, where should the employer go? Let me see, it's actionable trespass under state law. So even the authority that they point to saying that the NLRB somehow has a right or jurisdiction over trespass matters says just the contrary. And of course, our cite to the Chief Justice's concurring opinion in Taggart wasn't for the proposition that trespass is a deeply rooted matter, although that's true. Our cite to Justice Berger's decision in the Taggart case was that there is no remedy for employers for trespass under the National Labor Relations Act. You can seek to prohibit intimidating behavior in the workplace that is trespassory in nature, but because it's aimed at the employees' rights, it's an NLRA matter. If you're talking about property owners' property rights to exclude those who shouldn't be here because they're exceeding the scope of their invitation, that's state law. The union also spends a fair amount of time arguing that because there's no violence involved, then it's not a matter of deeply rooted local interest. That's also wrong. We cited to the court the Lynn case, 1966 case, where the United States Supreme Court said that libel was a matter deeply rooted in local interest. Libel does not involve violence. 1977, the United States Supreme Court ruled in the Farmer case that intentional infliction of emotional distress. In that case, it was the union bad-mouthing one of its former members, that the intentional infliction of emotional distress was a matter deeply rooted in local interest, not a violence case. Of course, Texas, or the Sears case, is about peaceful trespass. In fact, the court said in the Sears case that they took the Sears case to deal with trespassory conduct in a peaceful picketing setting. peaceful picketing setting. And then, of course, the next deeply rooted case we had from the United States Supreme Court after Sears was the Belknap case, 1983 case. There, the Supreme Court dealt with a fraudulent inducement claim by replacement strikers, folks who had been brought in to replace economic strikers, told that they were going to be permanent replacements. Then when the company and the union struck a deal, there's a pun in there somewhere, when they brought the strikers back as part of a settlement with the union, they kicked the replacement workers out. And the replacement workers sued the employer and said, wait a second, fraudulent inducement. In the Belknap case, the Supreme Court went through all of its deeply rooted jurisprudence, Lynn, Farmer, Sears. It said, when you look at that section of the Belknap case, the Supreme Court says, here's the Garmin preemption doctrine, generally don't want to mess with the labor board's jurisdiction, but there's this deeply rooted exception. And here are cases that support that, Lynn, Farmer, Sears. And then the court goes on to find that fraudulent inducement is not, or is a matter of deeply rooted local interest and not subject to preemption. Absolutely, positively, no violence involved in that case. So the idea that without violence there can be no deeply rooted exception is simply wrong. I heard from my union colleague a couple of other things that I wanted to respond to. First, that the post-Sears, there were numerous cases post-Sears that held preemption. I believe those are at page 55 of the union's petition. Every single one of those cases is a arguably protected case, not an arguably prohibited case. So I want to spend just a moment there, and I'm going to steal some of Mr. Casey's time to do that. Under Garmin, two separate prongs, arguably prohibited, arguably protected, and the union focused their entire oral argument here substantively on the former, arguably prohibited. If the union's conduct could be so egregious as to violate federal labor law rights of employees by bullying them in the workplace, then it must be preempted, right? Wrong. That's what Sears told us. Wrong. Two different legal controversies. The Supreme Court in the Sears case also talked in a separate analytical section about arguably protected cases. And this is a situation where it's not a question of is the union doing something wrong, but do they have a right to be on the property? Does the labor law somehow trump the private property owner's rights? And prior to 1992, that was an open question. We didn't really know what the deal was when it came to the right of of unions to be on an employer's property. The labor board went back and forth. They had some crazy balancing test. Nobody really knew. But in 1992, the United States Supreme Court answered the question definitively in the Leshmere versus NLRB case, L-E-C-H-M-E-R-E, Leshmere versus NLRB. Cited in our papers. The Supreme Court there said definitively, union folks do not have a right to be on the private property of an employer, absent two very narrow exceptions, neither at issue here. The first one is disparate treatment. If you allow the Girl Scouts to do conga lines in your produce aisle, then you can't prevent the union from doing a conga line in your produce aisle. Nobody is coming forward here before this court or any other court saying that Walmart has allowed the kind of conduct at issue in this trespass complaint by any other party. So that's not an issue. The Supreme Court in Leshmere said there's a second exception where a union may have a right of access that trumps property rights. Accessibility, employee accessibility. And the Supreme Court gave us three examples of what that meant. Mining camp, logging camp, resort, mountain hotel. None of those apply here. The union's not arguing that they apply. So there is absolutely nothing in front of the court that would support any post-Leshmere arguably protected argument, which is why the union focuses on the arguably prohibited section. Now, I want to think just one more minute about the union's claim that Sears does not stand for the idea that trespass, the location of trespass, is a matter deeply rooted in local interest. When I've read that multiple times, I've heard it multiple times, and I ask myself, what did the Supreme Court say it said in Sears about trespass and about preemption? And so I look to the Belknap case, which I mentioned earlier, and that case, as I mentioned, talked about this fraudulent inducement scenario. And the court talked about its Sears decision in that case. What did it say? It said, in Sears versus Carpenter, this is Belknap, 1983, talking about the most recent deeply rooted case. It said, quote, in Sears versus Carpenter, we held that a state trespass action was permissible and not permitted or not preempted since the action concerned only the location of the picketing, while the arguable unfair labor practice would focus on the object of the picketing. In that case, we emphasized that a critical inquiry in applying the Garmin rules, where the conduct at issue in the state litigation is said to be arguably prohibited by the act and hence within the exclusive jurisdiction of the NLRB, is whether the controversy presented to the state court is identical with that which could be presented to the board. There, the state court and the board controversies could not fairly be called identical. So, if that wasn't enough, let's look at Leshmere, 1992. There, the court was, as I mentioned, was ruling on whether unions have a right of access to private property. They said no, with two narrow exceptions. What did they say about Sears? The court there said, quote, we held in Sears that arguable Section 7 claims do not preempt state trespass law, in large part because the trespasses of non-employee union organizers are far more likely to be unprotected than protected. And we have cited a number of other cases, including the only Texas case that we could find on this issue, the Harvey Industries versus Union of Electronic Workers, where that court said trespass is a matter deeply rooted in local interest. And in fact, they call it, quote, intensely local interest. The quote there from the Harvey Court, Eastern District of Texas, 1989, the court said, quote, the court, referring to the U.S. Supreme Court, has held that state jurisdiction to enforce its laws prohibiting violence, defamation, the intentional infliction of emotional distress, obstruction of access to property, and trespass is not necessarily preempted. So, it seems to me that a lot of courts have held that trespass is a matter deeply rooted in local interest and feeling, including the Supreme Court at least twice post-Leshmere. And so with that, let me simply conclude by saying that what's going on here is not going on in a vacuum. This is being repeated over and over and over again in states across the United States. Now, I know you all don't have to give deference, and perhaps you shouldn't, to trial court decisions in other jurisdictions, but I did want to point out to you that we had provided an oral argument handout for you here where we have given you the rulings of four other sister state courts where they have dealt and wrestled with the exact same issues that you all are reviewing. And at tab one to that, we gave you the excerpts. And the chief judge of the Florida court heard this case in Orange County, Florida, Judge Alice Blackwell. And I commend her analysis to you because I think it probably summarizes what I've gone on and on for the past 25 minutes better and more articulately than I have. So with that, I'll finish. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wheelis. Mr. Casey, you have a few moments left.
Well, I'd probably be violating every rule of appellate advocacy by responding to an argument that hasn't been made. It's a little bit like shadow boxing, but I will just briefly say that, and I feel that I must say that if there's ever been a case that fits the definition of frivolous appeal in Rule 45, this has to be that case. If anything, the motion to dismiss and the interlocutory appeal that's before the court today demonstrates just how easily the Citizens Protection Act can be abused by defendants to delay a case and to place unnecessary burdens on legitimate plaintiffs for purely strategic purposes. And the reason that I say that, I know how reluctant this court is to find an appeal frivolous, as it should be. Should be very cautious in applying that rule. But the reason I say that without any reservation is this. From the very beginning of this anti-SLAPP proceeding, the appellants have conceded facts that under settled federal and state law conclusively defeat their burden under Section 27005B that they were exercising their First Amendment rights of free speech and association, and conclusively proves our burden under Section 27005C that they were trespassing when they were conducting these activities on private property. Basically, based on the admissions that the appellants made from the outset, and what they've conceded in their briefs before the court, Judge Sutter really had no other alternative but to deny the motions to dismiss. Very quickly, the appellant's position before this court is based on two false legal propositions. The first is that they argue that their picketing activities are protected exercises of free speech and association, even though they're being conducted on private property. As this court knows, for at least the last 40 years, since the Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court's decision in Lloyd versus Tanner, the Supreme Court has held repeatedly that there is no First Amendment rights given to trespassers and uninvited guests when they're conducting their activities on private property that's used solely for private purposes. The second, if I may, if the court will allow me, the second false legal proposition is that simply because Walmart opened its doors to the public, they are invitees of Walmart's. And Texas law is clear, and we've cited the court cases in our briefs and in the handouts, that under Texas law, in order to establish that you're an invitee by implication, you must be there, or the evidence must show that you're there for some purpose that the private property owner opened its business to the public. Thank you, Your Honor, for giving me just a few more seconds of time. We pray that you affirm Judge Sutter's order denying the motion to dismiss and deny the petition for the mandamus. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. Mr. Tanner.
Just a few points to respond to Mr. Wheelis's argument. With respect to these other decisions in Florida and I believe three other states that he mentioned, those matters are on appeal, just like this one. And I would also invite the court and urge the court to read the very thoughtful decision finding preemption by the Washington State Court that is in the record, which actually does an excellent job of analyzing the various legal principles that are operating here. Counsel said that to prove trespass, Walmart had to allege the defendant's conduct, and they made allegations pertaining to Channing, wearing T-shirts, handbilling, and the like, because that was necessary to show the circumstances surrounding the conduct. This is just the same allegation they made in the unfair labor practice charge, supported by the same evidence, involving the same legal theory, and the same alleged facts. Just as Sears said, these are common elements in both claims, hence they are preempted by the National Labor Relations Act under the Supremacy Clause. Now, with respect to this talisman that only the location is an issue here, that's actually not correct. The injunction that was sought, or the TRO that was sought in the trial court and obtained, actually regulates the conduct of relators inside the store. It basically it permits them to enter the stores as long as they're shopping. So the trespass was not only directed to the location, but to the activities of relators inside the stores. So the idea that this is just about location is not correct.
But doesn't the private business owner have the right to retract consent to enter?
The private business owner does have the right to retract consent to enter. There's no evidence in this case that any Walmart associate or our Walmart representative stayed past their welcome in these stores in Texas. I can't speak to evidence in any other store, in any other location, or any other state. It's difficult to respond to these matters that were filed yesterday at the 11th hour on these other cases, because quite frankly, I'm not that familiar with the evidence in those other locations. But yes, the invitation can be retracted or rescinded. It was not here, in our view, at least across the board. Only the UFCW International Union received correspondence revoking the invitation. Our Walmart representatives received no such correspondence. Jobs, North Texas Jobs with Justice, received no such correspondence. Various representatives and associates of Walmart who have been enjoined in this case received no such correspondence. So our view is that it's arguable that the invitation was rescinded with respect to UFCW International Union. It clearly was not with respect to any other appellant in this case. With respect to this false dichotomy that's been raised concerning a distinction between alleged coercion of an employee or a group of employees under Section 8B and property rights, the local 926 case, which was cited by counsel, indicated that doesn't matter in terms of the preemption analysis. There, as counsel noted, the alleged unfair labor practice was union activity that resulted in a supervisory employee being discharged. The unfair labor practice charge before the board only dealt with that individual's rights, employee rights, yet the court in Local 926 held that even though only the rights of the employee were at stake there, that it was preempted, and the analysis has made in the case law makes no distinction between employee rights and property rights in that respect. With respect to the idea that property rights, again, are some magic talisman that enables the Walmart parties to evade this sweeping preemption doctrine, look at their own words. Quote, in the ULP they filed with the NLRB, quote, the UFCW and our Walmart violated the NLRA by conducting a series of trespassery demonstrations. That doesn't sound like language to me that suggests that the Walmart parties believe that this is a matter reserved under state law or a matter of state property rights. They asserted just the opposite to the NLRB. They want to have it both ways. They want to go to the forum where they believe they can get the desired outcome. And again, the summary of events, I commend that to your reading. Same evidence, same facts in both cases. With respect to the matter of state property rights, by their argument, this is wholly a matter of property rights, and trespass is wholly a creature of state law or protection of private owners' rights is wholly a matter of state law. I direct your attention to the Supreme Court's decision in Sears again at 436 U.S. at page 204. 436, 204. There the Supreme Court said, quote, some violations of state trespass laws may be actually protected by Section 7 of the Federal Act. So the Supreme Court has not ever suggested or indicated that state property rights or state trespass laws is a matter wholly within the domain of the state courts. It depends on the circumstances. Here, the Walmart parties invoked the National Labor Relations Board's jurisdiction, and the National Labor Relations Board has exclusive jurisdiction of this dispute. In their basis of the charge that was prepared by Walmart's counsel here today, they said the board's on-point decision in District 7065 establishes that the foregoing store invasions violated Section 8B1A even in the absence of violence, threats of violence, or the blocking of ingress or egress. So they're talking about property rights, not just employee rights. I think the local 926 case, as I suggested, is important. There, the labor board charge was determined to be preempted. With respect to the suggestion that the Walmart parties have made at various times that relators do not take the position that the NLRA protects its actions, there is actually a pending unfair labor practice charge making that very assertion, that the conduct in dispute here is protected by the National Labor Relations Act. Just under the case law in Sears and the Garmin Doctrine is so clear, we believe that the strongest view and the clearest view is that the arguably prohibited prong of preemption instead of the arguably protected prong is dispositive of the outcome. The Hillhaven case and others that we've cited post-Sears, these are cases where the courts have found that allegedly trespassery union conduct was preempted. The Crenshaw Construction case out of the District Court of Massachusetts, the Hillhaven case, very similar with respect to the legal principles that are involved. In the Riesbeck Food Markets case, the highest court of West Virginia determined that nonviolent trespassery conduct there was preempted by federal labor law. The Cross Country Inn case, there a high appellate court in Ohio determined that the National Labor Relations Act preempted nonviolent trespassery, alleged trespassery conduct. The highest court of the state of Tennessee in the Wiggins case cited in our brief, there the court determined that the NLRA preempted trespassery conduct. And then the Shirley case, also cited in our brief, there the highest court in the state of Kansas made the same determination. These are all post-Sears. And these are certainly states whose courts are just as concerned about protecting the property rights of private business owners and the rights of their citizens as the courts in Texas. And so I think that the analysis of Garmin and Sears mandates a finding that the trial court abused its discretion in overruling the plea to jurisdiction. The case law in Texas is very clear. I don't know that this is really in dispute, but a finding that by the trial court that it has jurisdiction over a matter where it lacks subject matter jurisdiction is as a matter of law an abuse of discretion in Texas. So with that, we respectfully ask that the court grant the petition for mandamus. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tanner. And Mr. Tanner, if you would like the opportunity within the next 10 days to respond to the handout that the court received today, you may do so in accordance with our rules on post-submission briefs. But keep it limited to those matters.
I will.
Thank you. Thank you. I thank all of you all and the entire court does for all of your briefing and your hard work on this matter. It's been of excellent assistance to the court. Your case is now submitted. This being our only case on the docket, we will now adjourn.